Darnell Mooney one-on-one at the bottom.
Cousins looks right, has a man. Touchdown, Drake London.
Well, that didn't seem possible. No, it's not because Cousins isn't a clutch quarterback. He has more fourth quarter comebacks in regulation and in overtime over the last 5 years of any quarterback, with the exception of, believe it or not, Derek Carr. I did not know that until last night. But man, the win probability for those of you that follow that stupid thing on ESPN was at 98.8%. when Philadelphia lined up for a third and three, and the Falcons had no timeouts left deep in Atlanta territory. So much strategy, Denton, to discuss. What a football game. Yes, I was very happy for you-know-who. As Al Galdi dubbed him about a year ago, his name is just too incendiary around here. It's too triggering around here. We'll just refer to him as you know who. You know who really needed it last night, and it was big for us, because right now Washington, after Atlanta's improbable win last night at the Link, Washington is tied for first place in the division. Technically, based on tiebreakers, they're actually in first place because they are 1-0 in the division. So there is that. There's only been one division game played now. We've got lots left during the course of this season, but Washington sits with Philadelphia and Dallas at 1-1. God, it is early in the season, but man, have we seen some football. We're going to get to last night. I've got, upon further review, I've got some good stuff on Jaden Daniels and the sacks that he took yesterday, and a couple of big missed opportunities. I mean, we talked about the Noah Brown, you know, double move, stop and go opportunity that he missed, but there was another play that, after watching the All 22, I think what would have been a touchdown. And somebody called yesterday to say Luke McCaffrey was missing in action. Actually, he was in action and he was open a couple of times. But Jaden just didn't hit him. So we will get to that here in the first hour. Rhett Lewis from the NFL Network will join us at 11:35. We'll take some calls today, too, because we didn't get to a lot of you yesterday. But listen to this, Denton, for the week two of the NFL. All right, we had 12 of 16 games decided by 7 or fewer points. We had four of the 6 biggest underdogs won outright. The Raiders, the Falcons, the Saints, and the Buccaneers. The two biggest underdogs were the Raiders and the Buccaneers. They both won games outright. By the way, for the second straight week, we've seen the biggest underdog on the board win the game outright. By the way, as a road team, week one it was New England at Cincinnati. On Sunday it was the Raiders at the Ravens. And survivor pools all over the country have essentially seen most of their participants wiped out after 2 weeks of the NFL season. How about this from the Circa? The Circa has the Circa Sportsbook in Vegas. We know some of our good friends work out there or work there. My good buddy Aaron Oster, who produces the podcast, works for the Circa Sportsbook. Our good friend Tim Murray does his VSiN show from the Circa Sportsbook. Their survivor pool is the biggest in the country. Again, for those of you who don't know what a survivor pool is, all you do is each week you pick a winner. No point spread. If that team wins, you survive until the next week. If that team loses, you're out. You can't pick the same team more than once in a year. Well, Cincinnati in week one essentially eliminated about a third of the Circa survivor pool. And then after Baltimore, Detroit, and last night Philadelphia lost, more than a third was out. 70%, Denton, of the survivor pool per the Circa Sportsbook out after 2 weeks. That's the NFL, man. You have no idea what is going to happen every week. And that's what makes it so much fun. And, of course, last night we get to one of the more improbable finishes we've seen since, I guess, Kirk engineered the largest comeback in NFL history 2 years ago against the Indianapolis Colts late in the season. So for those of you that didn't stay up and watch the game, I want to give you some context to this. Philly looked good last night offensively. Jalen Hurts really looked like Jalen Hurts again. We'll get to the end here in a moment in the game that they really blew. But Jalen Hurts, who I said, Denton, last week after the Green Bay-Philadelphia game when we came in on Monday after the first week of the NFL season and we went back to that game, I said, man, he just looks too bulked up. He looks slow. He looks unathletic. He's physical. He's a bull. He's a fullback. When he runs, last night, I don't know what it was, but all of a sudden, he looked fleet again. He looked fast. He's also incredibly powerful. Jalen Hurts looked like Jalen Hurts from 2 years ago. 13 carries, 85 yards. Barkley had 95 yards rushing. They rushed for 186 yards, 5 yards per pop. He threw for 183, but completed 75% of his passes. He looked good, and they didn't have A.J. Brown last night. If you're wondering, Jahan Dotson, one target, one catch, 6 yards. It was kind of a quick screen. So he didn't have his number one target, and yet they were in control of this game late. So takeaway number one before we get to the end, for those of you that missed it, and it was incredible, improbable, with a lot of different strategic decisions that can be questioned, especially as it relates to Philadelphia. But I thought Jalen Hurts looked good. And I thought he looked really good. And I think Philadelphia just looks more like the Eagles of 2 years ago. They lost last night, and it's a hurtful loss for them. Barkley is a game changer, and he made a big error at the end of the game. But I'm not going to put him on the same level of Christian McCaffrey to San Francisco. But if he stays healthy, he's a total difference maker. For them. A.J. Brown, by the way, is going to be out for a few weeks. That's a big, big loss. They play the Saints this week on the road, and then they're at the Buccaneers. So their next two games are against two undefeated NFC teams. On the flip side, you know, Kirk took a pounding. We talked about the game against Pittsburgh in the opener. He didn't look like himself in that game. He looked tentative. He looked like he still might not be 100%. But I also pointed out, Denton, and you did too, that for whatever reason against the Pittsburgh Steelers, they had him in pistol pretty much exclusively. There were like two under center snaps, and there was no play action in the game. I think what we found out was that was the plan for Pittsburgh because they were fearing T.J. Watt, Alex Highsmith, Cam, the whole group. Pittsburgh right now through 2 weeks looks like the best defensive team in the league, but that sometimes doesn't sustain itself without, you know, an offense to match. But anyway, he took, per usual, you know who, for whatever reason, is just so polarizing. And people basically said, yeah, he done. He done after one game. After one game. And then early in the game last night, once again, he was tentative. Couple of throws. He almost got picked on the opening drive or the second drive of the game on a late throw. He had another late throw. He had an underthrown ball. And he had time. That was the thing. Typically, when you see Kirk with time, he'll carve you up. Although, to be honest with you, you don't want to blitz him either because he's carved that up too. They ran the football. Bijan Robinson, we saw two of... Who are the best running backs in the game right now after McCaffrey? Right now. Would you say Barkley?
Definitely Barkley. I would throw Bijan in there and then a healthy Nick Chubb.
Yeah, by the way, let me just throw this out. In terms of all around, Alvin Kamara. With a good scheme, Clint Kubiak's put together scheme with some speed and an offensive line, Alvin Kamara's, he is deadly. As a back. I think he's outstanding. But I would put Bijan Robinson, and I would put the tandem of Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier near the top. By the way, I like our tandem. Brian Robinson Jr., and Austin Ekeler. They can run the football. They've got some playmakers. They don't have Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. Drake London's good, and Darnell Mooney is okay as a kind of a third slot receiver. But Kyle Pitts right now, just he's not what we thought he was coming out of Florida. He doesn't get a lot of separation. He's a big dude, and he actually blocked well last night. But I don't see the separation there. But anyway, this game was kind of muddling along. It was one of the fastest football games I have ever seen. They were midway through the fourth quarter, and the game was just over 2 hours old. There was just, first of all, there weren't, you know, the teams weren't throwing a ton of incompletions. The clock just wasn't stopping. I think by the time we got to the fourth quarter, each team had had the ball five times, six times, and we were in the fourth quarter already. And the drives were long. Philadelphia had a long touchdown drive that took 9.5 minutes. It was like 17 plays, 70 yards. And the game went back and forth, but now we get to the end, and Philadelphia is up 18-15, and they are driving, and Atlanta is now worn down, and Atlanta uses their timeouts, and Philadelphia faces a 3rd-and-3 at the Atlanta 10-yard line, right after Atlanta had called their last timeout with 1:46 to go. Now, to me, it's really simple, and I don't care about the analytics, the fourth down analytics. I don't care what a lot of these people say, because we'll get to the play in a moment. To me, it's a simple question. Is it better to give Atlanta the ball back with more time or less time? More time or less time? It's not that hard. The answer is less time. And so when you don't have a timeout left and it is 3rd-and-3, and let me just also mention, the Eagles were running the ball down the Falcons' throat, whether it was Barkley or whether it was Jalen Hurts. They couldn't stop the run. And they ran against a bunched-up front, okay, the Falcons selling out because this is they got to get a stop here. 40 seconds will run off the clock, and then they're hoping that Philadelphia kicks a field goal or goes for it, and they've got a chance down 3 or down 6. But it's the only chance they have is to stop Philadelphia from making a first down or making a touchdown. So Philadelphia runs a little fake handoff, and then they got Barkley out in the flat. He actually had scored on the play earlier. He didn't score. It got overturned because he was down at the half-yard line. And he's wide open. The play works beautifully. And by the way, for those that say, well, they decided to throw the ball, that's first of all, a terrible decision. It actually isn't a decision to throw the ball. They decided on an option play. If Jalen Hurts, as he rolls right, if Barkley isn't wide open, he runs the football or just gets down so the clock rolls. But they thought they could catch Atlanta bunched up, and Barkley's wide open. And you know what Barkley's done a lot of over his career? He's dropped passes. And he dropped the football in the flat by himself. It's an easy first down, and the game is over if he catches the football. It is you throwing to your young son or young daughter in the backyard with nobody around. And he just dropped it. And the clock stops. And the clock stops with 1:39 to go in the game. Or 1:42 to go in the game. And now Atlanta has life. So first things first, because there's some interesting things going on here. The play call worked. The execution, the player messed it up. My personal view is, in that situation with the Philadelphia Eagles, I'd go back-to-back tush pushes to end the game on 3rd-and-3. But the most important thing is that you guarantee the clock runs when that next play is over. And they didn't do that. They put into play the very small chance that the clock would stop. So I'll ask you, Denton. I don't love the call there. I don't care that it was wide open and he dropped the football. For me, it's all about less time for Atlanta versus the possibility of more time. I'm running the football. I'm going back-to-back tush pushes, whatever it is. I am absolutely 100% going to make sure that clock is rolling when that play is over. What did you think of the play call on third and three?
I thought it was incredibly on brand for Philadelphia, and then echoing what you say, incredibly misguided and dumb. Yeah, Nick Sirianni has built a brand of being aggressive. You saw that in the beginning of the game when he's going for it deep in the territory. It's like, guy, just get points up on the board. Like, you saw what Atlanta's offense was last week, and it wasn't spectacular. Just get points on the board and force them to play from behind. And now when you end up losing by one, you look back at that situation like, wow, why don't we just go for the field goal? That's kind of what his brand is. It's uber aggressive for the sake of, I don't know, like playing to the city. Like, I can't find a rational reason in terms of wins and losses why they are so aggressive. And he has become, like, he was like this poster child of like fun the first year when everything was going well. But you're right, he is so obnoxious. The facial expressions, the reactions, and now doing this uber aggressive for no reason when just not, instead of just doing the smart thing, he has become exceptionally annoying.
They have given up, I think it's 140 points in the final 2 minutes of a half or a game over the last whatever number of games it is. It's like number one in the league. So, if they complete the pass or if it's not open and Jalen Hurts goes down, because that's an option play there, okay? People that say they decided to throw the football. No, they actually decided to have throwing the football an option if it was throwing to your young son or daughter in the backyard because that's how open it was. And it was. I personally would say you have to guarantee that 40 seconds when the play is over, so the play is going to end at about a minute 40 roughly, that you're now, you know, on your fourth down play, whether it's a field goal or go for it, and we'll get to that in a moment, is going to bring it to under a minute left in the game and Atlanta has no timeouts. It is a massive difference. We all know this as NFL fans. A minute 40 with no timeouts versus under a minute with no timeouts. You know, especially when you need a touchdown. We'll get to that. But they put in play the possibility of a clock stoppage. It was stunning. If you didn't stay up to watch this game, these are the games you just love as a football fan because it was over. The game was over. Like, there was no chance if you were watching this game that Atlanta could win the game. You know, even if they forced the field goal with a minute to go, the way they had played, it was more, you know, a lot of dink and dunk, not a lot of big shots down the field. That's the way Vic Fangio calls a defense. You know, they play that too deep, and you got to be patient against it. We saw that Sunday, by the way, with Jaden Daniels, part of what I'll talk about in upon further review of the game on Sunday. And all of a sudden, when he dropped that ball, I was like, whoa! Kirk's going to get a chance here to go down and win this football game. But that brought strategic decision number two into play. This, to me, is even more interesting. So it's fourth and three now at the Atlanta 10-yard line. The Eagles chose to kick a field goal to extend the lead to six from 18-15 to 21-15. And the analytics people, at least those that play analytics people on the internet, said that it was a slight decision to go for it on fourth and three minute 39 left, minute 42 left, whatever it was. Here's the rationale. The rationale is that teams, when they are down three, are much more conservative in trying to get in field goal range versus when they need a touchdown, they're much more aggressive. And that puts you as a defense into a more vulnerable position to losing in regulation. I get that. That is intuitive as football fans, right? When a team just needs three, they're playing for the three. They're playing for field goal range. When they have to score a touchdown, they're going for the touchdown. Because they have no choice. When they're down three, they never seem to be going for the touchdown to win the game. I just, in that moment, in that game, the context around it, I am not, first of all, giving them a minute 35 or a minute 39 left. I'm giving them less than a minute because I would have run the ball on third down. But I'm still kicking the field goal there to go up six. If you can't stop a team with no timeouts left in a minute 40 from getting into your end zone, and by the way, they had only gotten into the end zone once. They struggled in the red zone, Atlanta had. They were, I think, 0 for 2 in the red zone. They kicked three field goals in the game. They were 1 for 3 in the red zone. Well, that's because they scored on that final drive. But going into it, they were 0 for 2. And the touchdown that they had was on an all-out zero coverage blitz, and Kirk burned it and hit Mooney for a touchdown. So I think fourth and three. Now, fourth and three, there's a good chance Philly will get it. You know, and by the way, you can throw it there because it doesn't matter on fourth down if the clock stops, because it's going to stop anyway on an incomplete pass. So I think the chances that they make fourth and three are probably 50-50 or better. Now, they missed early in the game, had a chance to kick a field goal, as you mentioned, early in the game. But I'm taking the six-point lead, putting my defense on the field and saying, this is a team that hasn't hit a big – they've hit one big play all night. We can stop them from scoring a touchdown. But the analytics people said it's a very close call, that Philly should have gone for it, because it's better if they miss that Atlanta's then going for three instead of for a touchdown. What do you think?
I have a question. Do you think that the NFL, I guess namely Sirianni, this arrogant human, do you think he is caught up to what Kirk Cousins is now, or do you think he is still holding on to perception of, we're going to give ourselves a six-point lead against a guy that struggles in prime time and is in clutch? Because we know now that he's clutch. Like, the past 2-3 years have shown that he's one of the best, and you gave the stat, he's one of the best in the NFL. But do you think that this organization is still holding on to the perception that he's not that? Which is why they felt more comfortable going up six, saying he's not going to march all the way down the field. He hasn't done it.
I don't. I mean, I think these guys, first of all, it's like all these narratives about certain players that are polarizing, you know, just how silly they are. I mean, the prime time, he's won four out of his last five in prime time, including the last one last year against the 49ers. No, I don't. I think Sirianni typically just thinks about himself and his team and has that aggressive mindset that you discussed. And but in that particular situation, he decided to go up six. I think it was the right call. The analytics people, I think, disagree with that because of that, you know, mindset about teams down three versus needing a touchdown or else. The key there is you didn't go into third down understanding a simple question. Is it better if Atlanta has more time or less time when they get the ball back, if they get the ball back? And the answer, of course, is less time. And they didn't, if they had done that and kicked the field goal and they're up six with 55 seconds to go, it's a completely different situation. Anyway, let me finish with this. You probably know by now, they kicked the field goal. Atlanta takes the ball at their own 30 with a minute 39 to go. And six plays later, they're in the end zone. Cousins, you know, over the middle to Kyle Pitts for a first down, to Mooney for 21, to Mooney for 26, to London for 5. Then there was, a missed interference call in the end zone on second and 5. And then third down and 5 at the Philly 7 with 34 seconds to go. Drake London makes a move on Darius Slay that is just outstanding. And Kirk puts it on the money. And all of a sudden, the game is tied at 21-21. But that's when the next interesting thing happens. Drake London gets flagged for excessive celebration. He did some sort of thing with the holsters and the guns. I don't even know what he was doing. It's stupid, though. I actually thought it was dumb to flag it, too. I thought it was over the top to flag it in that particular situation. We've seen that sometimes. It's just, what are you doing? Stop. Put the flag back in your pocket. But it made the extra point a 48-yard extra point, which in today's game is no big deal, right? You know, and Koo, the kicker, made it. And they took a 22-21 lead. I thought in the moment it was an interesting conversation about whether or not the Eagles should have chosen the assessment of the penalty on the point after or the kickoff that would follow. And the reasoning is you have that ball kicked off from the 20, and I looked up the rules. I'll cut to the chase. You're not allowed now on a touchdown, a score, you're not allowed to take that penalty on the kickoff. It has to be assessed on the try. But if the penalty had happened on the try, meaning the PAT, then the kicker goes back 15 yards to the 20. Everything else stays the same with the new kickoff rules. The zone in which coverage and return, you know, that 40-yard line, 35-yard line, they stay there. The landing zone is the same. Anyway, long story short, they took it on the try because they didn't have a choice. He made it, and then Philly, still 34 seconds to go, and they had plenty of time. I mean, in this day and age, all you got to do is cross midfield, and there's a chance at a field goal attempt. And Jalen Hurts threw to Devontae Smith, overthrew him. And I think, honestly, one of the better players in the league right now in terms of secondary players, Jesse Bates, makes the interception. He's outstanding. He is really a good player. And Atlanta pulled off a miracle win. It was big for them because they were reeling after last week. And their quarterback got it done when it mattered. Philly drops to 1-1. That's a hurtful loss. That game was over. But I still look at Philadelphia through the course of that game, Denton, and I'm like, they're better than they were last year. And they didn't have A.J. Brown last night. But Barkley makes them so much more dynamic offensively. What did you think?
I did think they looked better, but I'm kind of concerned about what they're going to do with the extended time off for A.J. Brown. Because what did they say, like 4 weeks, 4-6 weeks, something like that, somewhere in that neighborhood? I really like Devontae Smith, but we've never seen him be a true number one option. And, I mean, where are all the people that said that Adam Peters got fleeced with the Jahan Dotson trade? Y'all want to come out of the woodworks? We hiding, because he has one target through 2 weeks. He was supposed to be this next guy. We are asking questions. Do they have the best wide receiver core in the NFL? No, they clearly don't.
That's right. I forgot about that. I mean, like, when we first started to discuss the possibility, we were talking, it's a day two pick. It's a third, fourth rounder. And people did initially think that Philadelphia fleeced Washington in that deal. Look, it's too early. God, I mean, these definitive sweeping conclusions after the guys played two games and been there for a month is crazy town. I mean, I've seen some of it. Oh, they fleeced Philly. Stop. It's way too early. The deal in the moment was actually a fair deal. That's what he was worth. All right, he was worth somewhere, or you know, on a day two, a late day two, night two pick, you know, third round, maybe early day three. But that's what he had become worth a lot less. But it's two games. Just like, you know, Cousins after one game, it's one game. By the way, they played the Steelers and TJ Watt. Just like, I don't know, maybe New Orleans, because, I don't know, the New Orleans thing is actually kind of interesting. I think that might have some legs, actually. But, you know, at this point, you know, like, who had the Saints, Buccaneers, Seahawks, and Vikings in the NFC as the only undefeated teams after 2 weeks? The answer would be nobody. You don't know anything about the NFL. It just is so dynamic. And that'll bring us into incredible interest into week three. Really, really interesting game last night, especially the end of game strategy. I would say 75% of the time, I find my go-to, what I would do, aligning with what the analytics would say. Last night, I think you've got to focus solely on less time versus more time. And then less time means you kick the field goal to go up six. But whatever. They didn't run the clock down. They threw an incomplete pass. not intentionally. Feel bad for Saquon because he had such a good game, had such a great start last week, and then essentially they're hanging this one on him. All right, when we come back, I did watch a lot of the All-22, focused mostly on the offense and Jaden Daniels, the sacks. There were a couple of more missed opportunities. That is for sure. We'll get to that when we come back. Also give you guys a chance to weigh in. Two games in, you know, what are your thoughts on the rookie quarterback? We did this last week, I think, on Tuesday or Wednesday. We'll get your thoughts through 2 weeks. It's a lot more good than bad, that is for sure. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. All right, we're going to do some upon further review here on this Tuesday of the 21-18 win over the Giants. And I'm going to focus a lot on some of the constructive critique of Jaden's game. I gave him an A for the game. I thought there was a lot more good than bad. I still feel that way. I mean, the bottom line is, with the game on the line in the second half, he made play after play on every single drive of the second half. In each of those situations, the score was either tied or they were down three and had to have it, including, of course, the final drive where he comes up big on second and 10. Look, they stuffed Eckler on the first down play before the two-minute warning, and it's second and 10, and you're still in a tie game. Now, you have not yet punted in the game, so there's a level of confidence, but the throw he made to Noah Brown, and then finally a read option keeper for 14 yards. You know, one of the things that you noticed from watching this game, and we talked about it on Friday, I said I think a lot of the read option zone read keepers will be diminished because in a base 3-4, especially when those outside linebackers are good players, and Burns and Thibodeau are good players, they're playing that, and they're up right, they're in a two-point stance, just a little bit easier to hem that in. Still, it made it, you know, beneficial for Brian Robinson Jr. as a runner. That's the best part of what they've got going on right now. Just the threat of Jaden Daniels as a runner. But there were five sacks in the game, and there were a couple of huge missed opportunities. One of which we talked about yesterday, which was that opportunity to throw deep to Noah Brown in the second half on a double move. That was definitely a miss. But let me go through the sacks first and foremost, because it's like, look, this is a non-expert opinion. You know, this is you guys and I, we think we can look at this and we think we know. We're not always right, okay? But this is a best guess. And I did have a conversation with somebody about a couple of the plays, although not sacks, actually. So the first sack, the first two sacks are on the opening drive of the game, that very impressive long drive that took 9 minutes and 36 seconds off the clock, 16 plays. So the first one is a second and 7 at the Giants' 37-yard line. So they're in field goal range. They've been moving the football. By the way, you know, they got bailed out. Not bailed out, but it's this third. It happened twice in this game, too. Third time in two games where on a third down, they got a defensive penalty and stayed on the field. We see that as football fans every week. I'm just saying that they got help because a lot of times those calls are missed, and there was actually something missed in this game on one of the sacks. But so this is the play in which he turns what probably is a 10 to 12 yard loss into a 3 yard loss. He escapes Micah McFadden, number 41, who comes in completely untouched on a blitz. I can't explain to you whether or not this was identified and not picked up by Eckler, who's in the backfield, or identified and not picked up by the offensive line, or not identified at all. My guess is that it was disguised very well. McFadden disguises it very well, and he got immediate pressure up the middle as a fifth pass rusher right in Jaden's face, and he's about to knock them completely out of field goal range on that opening drive. Second and seven. Now they would have had a third down play, but the ball's going to be back towards the 50-yard line, all right, instead of in field goal range where they were. Well, we didn't know at that time that that was field goal range, and we still don't, because that's a 54-yarder from where it is. But Jaden did what he did a lot of at LSU. He turned a massive negative into a much less negative play. He escapes McFadden at strength, and then uses his legs to turn that into a 3-yard loss. They're back at the 40, and the next play is a play in which he scrambles for nearly a first down, but it sets up a 4th-and-1. They go for it, and Brian Robinson Jr. gets it with an easy 5-yard run. I don't think that's on Jaden. I don't think it's on Jaden. I don't think it's on the offensive line. I don't think it's on Kingsbury. I think that's one you just chalk up to the Giants made a play. They disguised it well. They figured it out. And here comes McFadden untouched. Somebody out there might be saying, damn it, you know, Biotish, you needed to see that. Or Jaden, this is what you should have looked for based on the tape that we watched during the week. The Giants did not show a lot of blitz pressure. Shane Bowen, their new defensive coordinator, is bend, don't break. You know, and you saw a lot of zone defense, more than I thought in watching the game. A lot of zone defense, which is why the patience that they showed, I actually thought was another positive for Jaden and for Kingsbury. That's why you saw a lot of line of scrimmage throws. That's why you saw, you know, a lot of, you know, running the football. The Giants were not going to get beat deep, although there were a couple of opportunities. The second sack is on that opening drive as well. It's 2nd and 9 at the Giant 12-yard line. And this is another one that's kind of hard to figure out, because he's working the right side of the field on 2nd and 9, and Sinnott, the rookie, is out in the flat for what appears to be just a quick swing to him, and then go get as many yards as you can. Now, it looks like in the uniform numbers, their red jerseys with those uniform numbers are hard on the all 22 to really identify. I think it's Ertz is option number 2, and he's covered, and they're dropping in zone there, and that's not an option. And so Jaden has, it's not an RPO. Jaden has the option to get it out quickly. He's not working the left side of the field. Terry's not even running because he's split wide to the left. It's not a play that he's supposed to come back and work that side of the field. And he just starts to take off, and he loses 3 yards. Or loses 5 yards, excuse me. I can't assess blame on him. I think he should have thrown the football. It may not have been a big play, but it would have been probably a 2-3-4 yard gain. And it would have set up a 3rd and 4 rather than what they ended up with, which was 3rd and 14 after he scrambled right and took a 5-yard loss, which was a sack. Now we go to drive number 2. So the first 2 sacks, it's hard for me. I mean, I'm sure that some of the internet film breakdown guys are much sharper, and so maybe they have a definite answer to that. But I think that second one is really, like, I'm not even sure what the play was. I think it was a quick throw to Sinnott, and for whatever reason, Jaden didn't throw it. So if he's supposed to throw that and didn't throw it, even if it wasn't going to be a big play, maybe just a small positive yardage gain, then it would be on him. Drive number 2, they have a 3rd down and 6 at the Giant 20-yard line. And this ends up being a sack, and the biggest sack in lost yardage play of the day is -7. So there's a big issue here. First of all, the O-line gets overwhelmed. This is on the offensive line without question in terms of the immediate pressure. But the reason Jaden doesn't throw the ball downfield is there is a missed illegal use of the hands defensive holding against, I'm pretty sure, it's Zacchaeus. And that looks like in his progression, it's probably one of the number one read. It's either the 1 read or the 2 read. And he has to, you know, look it away, and he takes a sack. And the offensive line did not hold up for him to get through any more progressions. But they missed a defensive penalty on that. That should have not that should have been a flag and a first down for Washington. It would have been at the Giant 15-yard line, first and 10 at the 15, although it would have been half the distance, so first and 10 at the 18 or 17-yard line. It was fourth and 13 after that 7-yard sack. I don't put that on anybody. I think that he had a read, and the receiver got completely taken out and knocked to the ground beyond 5 yards down the field, and it was just a missed call. All right, I got a couple of these others. I got the last two. That's three of the sacks so far. First two kind of, I don't know, to be honest with you, it's certainly not an egregious error by the quarterback. The first one, I think somebody picked up, missed the blitz, or it was just well-designed by the Giants. The second one, Jaden probably should just throw it out to the flat. And then the third one, they missed a defensive penalty that I think certainly got Jaden off his number one or number two read, and he took the biggest sack that he's taken so far in the two games. There were two more. I'll get to those after this. And then I'm going to tell you about the big missed opportunities. There were a couple. And the caller yesterday who said, where the hell was Luke McCaffrey? Well, the answer is he was wide open a couple of times. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app.
Major League Baseball, Nats fall to the Mets 2-1 in 10 innings last night. Jay Govern pitched 7 1/3, allowing just one run on four hits with five strikeouts. They're back at it tonight at Citi Field in New York. Mitchell Parker on the mound for the Nats. First pitch going to be at 7:10 on 106.7 The Fan. Last night, Monday Night Football, Kirk Cousins and the Falcons pick up a big win, 22-21. Cousins led a late game-winning touchdown drive, a touchdown to Drake London with 34 seconds left to give the Atlanta Falcons the lead. Elsewhere in the NFL, the Carolina Panthers announced yesterday they are benching 2023 number one overall pick Bryce Young in favor of Andy Dalton. The offense has struggled at best so far for Carolina. Elsewhere in the NFL, Isaiah Pacheco out 6 to 8 weeks with a leg injury. Cooper Kupp placed on IR with an ankle injury in Los Angeles. And in San Francisco, adding to the loss of Christian McCaffrey, 49ers now going to be without Debo Samuel for a couple of weeks due to a calf injury. And that's what's trending.
All right, we're going through some of the things from the game the other day, sort of an upon further review segment. And right now, just kind of breaking down the Jaden five sacks. Jaden Daniels took five sacks in the game. The first three happen on the first two drives. Number four happens on the third drive. I went through the first three. I really have a hard time knowing, and I think most people who aren't in that building wouldn't know the answer, even if they're sure of it. But the first one, McFadden comes free, and Jaden, instead of taking a 13-yard sack, you know, turns it into a 3-yard loss on the play. He did that a lot at LSU last year. Was it misidentified by O-line, by quarterback? Was the scheme not prepared for it? The game plan not prepared for it? I have no idea. The second sack is down in the red zone at the Giants 12. He's got 82, right? That's Sinnott. Sinnott's 82. He's got him in the flat. That looks like it's his number one read. I don't know why he didn't throw it. He took a 5-yard scramble sack on that one. The third one is a 3rd and 6 at the Giant 20-yard line. O-line gets overwhelmed, but Zacchaeus is clearly knocked down it's one of his primary looks, and there should have been a defensive penalty on that. The fourth one is the big one in terms of missed opportunities. So you go to 1st and 10 on the third drive. They've got the ball at their own 18-yard line. This is the play before the play in which he gets hurt on the scramble, okay? And it's interesting because this is the one thing in the first two games that I guarantee you they're the most frustrated with. And I wouldn't even call it frustration because usually he makes good plays out of these plays. But there's just a hesitation a bit to pull the trigger in one particular situation, and then there isn't eyes down the field once he starts to go off schedule. So on the first and 10 from their own 18, it's play action, and they're looking to take a shot here. Terry's the first read. He's split wide to the left, but there's safety help on Terry. And then Luke McCaffrey is running a crosser after starting. Where does he start on this play? He is in the slot, and he's running. Corner's got outside leverage. He's running a crosser across the field, and he breaks wide open into the space that Terry clears out with his corner or takes up with the corner and the safety. And Jaden never comes off Terry. And he didn't throw it to Terry, and that's fine because there is safety help, and the safety's probably a little late going there, so he could have taken a shot. He could have given Terry a shot there. Instead, when he doesn't like Terry on the deep crosser, he tucks it and starts to move. And McCaffrey is running away from a linebacker, and he's got to throw that football into that space and let McCaffrey get it. And I think, you know, these are, I'm sure, areas in which they're going through. It's his second game, and there's a lot more good. And he takes off here, and he does get sacked for a one-yard loss. But there is a big opportunity for Luke McCaffrey, and it's the next play that isn't a sack. I'll get to the fifth sack here in a moment, where he takes off, and he gets the wind knocked out of him on the run almost got the first down. Well, it did get the first down. It was the hold on for 1 second. Had this up a second ago. It's the 3rd and 13. It's the 3rd and 13 scramble where he gets the wind knocked out of him, right? And he gets 14 yards. Great play, great scramble, great result. Except for this. When he starts to scramble, Luke McCaffrey is not only open, he's wide open for what would be, at that point, a 87-yard touchdown pass. He drops back. There's some pressure. There's a big opening in the pocket, which he takes off, and that's where the eyes have to stay down the field. He is still nearly 10 yards away from the line of scrimmage at that point, and he is looking to go get the first down with his legs. He can do it. He's done it his whole life. And he moved the chains. He also took a big shot. Looked like a pretty big rib shot, but it turns out it was the wind knocked out of him. But Luke McCaffrey, if his eyes are up on this, is wide open behind essentially everybody. There are a couple of guys running deep with another receiver. I think it's De'Ami Brown. I can't tell, to be honest with you. And he takes off and runs and gets 14 yards and a first down. I would imagine those two plays back-to-back are two plays in which you're like, look, you took a sack for 1 yard on a one-yard loss on a first and 10, and if you'd been patient and it was blocked up well enough and you came off Terry, you had McCaffrey. And on the next play, you went and scrambled and got us a first down and kept us on the field. But if your eyes were down the field, it's an easy throw to McCaffrey, and I'm assuming McCaffrey's fast enough to then beat the defense, which would have turned and maybe had an angle on him. But it's a massive play, and those are the those are the two plays that I think back to back that I would bet you any amount of money they've spent some time with him on. Again, the result on the miss to McCaffrey when he's on the move is a 14-yard first down run. He does take a big shot on the play, but he moves the sticks. The other part of this is once he starts to scramble, he can make that throw. You know, it's not like he's scrambling left and has to turn and throw across his body. He's scrambling to the right as a right-handed quarterback, and McCaffrey is, you know, clearing in the left part of the field, 30 yards down the field, wide open. That's a missed opportunity for an off-schedule extension of the play, throw down the field versus a run. Big play on the run, first down yardage, much bigger play if he's got his eyes down the field because McCaffrey is wide open. So for the gentleman who called yesterday to say, what are we doing with Luke McCaffrey? Luke McCaffrey's doing just fine, at least based on a couple of the plays that I saw. The quarterback's got to keep his eyes downfield. And on that one-yard sack, that's one of those where it's like, get off one because Terry's got their safety help there. And look at number two. Number two's clearing. He's got a linebacker open on him, and there's a big space to throw into. There was one more sack. I'll get to that one when we come back. And then just a couple of other plays from the game that I just wanted to mention. And then we'll take calls. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Your thoughts on the rookie quarterback through two games. If someone hadn't seen either game, how would you describe Jaden Daniels' first two games? Phone lines are open, 301-230-0980. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.